Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story. Hey everyone, I'm your host Madeline Green, and this is Between the Barrels. I'm a little stuffy this week, so bear with me, you won't have to listen to my voice for too long. If you watched the Houston Rodeo Finals, you saw this lady smoke the competition on her amazing horse, Gus. It was so great to learn more about Leslie Smoligo's story and how winning that rodeo kind of changed how she's planning on finishing out the rodeo season. Take a listen. Hey, Leslie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So before we get into your story, congratulations on your big win at Houston. Kind of take us through that whole process. It's such a long journey to get to that finals. Tell us what that was like.
Oh, you know, I came from another rodeo and, you know, it was, you know, practice is so early in the morning. And we didn't go to practice. I slept right through it.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I know Gus finds barrels and stuff like that. So it was a Hail Mary, that first one. And, you know, from then on, he was just locked on. You know, we never finished lower than third. And, you know, the good Lord gave us our time. And, you know, he just ran amazing the whole time.
You know, some people kind of struggle with that pattern, with the barrels being far off the walls, but he seemed to handle that fine.
Yeah, I've never trained him with fences.
Okay.
So he really hunts his barrels, and the better off the fences there are, the better he runs.
Wow, that's great. Take us through that finals run.
Well, I was kind of upset that I was last on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I was very last of the whole of the finals, and I was like, well, you know, I was excited that we made the finals. So, you know, anything that happened over that was just a bonus. I was proud of what we accomplished. They're such tough girls and the best in the world. And, you know, you can't get your hopes up too much. And the morning that I woke up with the finals, I told my husband and I was like, it's a good day to win $50,000.
That's right.
He goes, yes, it is. But, you know, I was happy with no matter what happened. And being last on the ground, I was like, oh geez, you know, I know he's good on the bottom of the ground because that's how we always draw up. He went in there and he just made an amazing run, and I didn't think we were going to get much better than that because that was our fastest run that we have run so far. And I came out of the arena and I was so excited, and I told my husband, I was like, I don't know how much we got left in the tank. I was like, Gus, I don't know where we could have cut off time or anything like that. He just ran so great. And we had a 45-minute break, so I took him back to the trailer, took his boots off and loosened him up and just kind of let him set. And then we went back up there, and I thought I was going to be last out again. And they told me, no, you're first out. And I was like, are you sure? Because that doesn't ever happen. So I didn't really have time to think about it. So I went in and I was going to hold him as far as I could. And he wasn't going to let me hold him at all. And he took off and we ran a 14:35. And I was like, are you sure?
Is that correct?
Is it right? Because it didn't feel like it did the first time. It just felt real smooth, but I felt our barrels weren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
But he just turned on the speed and said, hold my beer, here we go.
That's amazing. So I just saw that puts you number one in the world standings. What is that like for you? And will that change the way that you rodeo the rest of the year?
Yeah, I was going to go out to California, but now I think I'm not going to. I'm going to hit San Angelo and concentrate on that and some other small rodeos so I can get my young horse, you know, ready.
Right.
And so he can help Gus out through the summer. And, you know, I'm going to just run Gus at the rodeos I know he really likes. He likes Reno. He loves the 4th of July. He loves Cheyenne. He loves Calgary. So if we can really step up to those rodeos like we have in the past, I think we'll be pretty comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us your barrel racing story. I know that you have a little bit of a different background. Tell us how you got started in the sport.
Well, when I was little, I begged and begged. My dad was a team roper, and I begged and begged and begged for a pony. And we lived on a feedlot, and he's like, "Well, you're three, And my sister had a pony growing up and stuff like that, and she was older. And I begged and begged and begged, and from the minute we got that pony for Christmas that year, I was three. It just, I never got off. I knew that was what I was supposed to do.
Right.
And we started showing horses. I was, of course, in lead line. And then I went on to show Western Pleasure and English and all those, events and stuff like that. And then we got into, with a association, I showed POAs, and we got into barrels with them. So I was in probably 23 classes a day
Wow.
on one horse.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and they were such a troopers. I mean, it was, they did everything I could possibly do with them. And living on a feedlot, we worked cattle on them, we chased pigs with them, and it was just fun growing up. And
Yeah.
then when we got into high school rodeo, my sister was a lot better than me. She got the pick of the crop, and I was kind of still like, I still like showing Western Pleasure horses and training those. And that's what I did. And I started training my own Western Pleasure horses by the age of nine.
That's awesome.
That's when I first trained my first 2-year-old and
Wow.
for Western Pleasure and stuff like that. And then I got into training reining horses and stuff like that down in Oklahoma after I moved down there from my parents after college. And, what I call my adopted dad, Hank Frieder, he had died of prostate cancer, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it anymore because that's what we did together.
Right.
And I just woke up one morning and said, "I'm going to run barrels. I need more chaos in my life."
For sure.
And so that's how it all started. I started my reining horse on barrels and, got my feet wet of how they do things and stuff like that. And I put a lot of my reining and Western Pleasure training, I incorporate that into my barrel of horses. And, I found Gus's full brother on the internet, and I was like, "Well, I think he'd work." And I had him 4 months and sold him for a bunch of money and paid off all my debts. And I knew they still had Gus, but they didn't really want to sell him because he was entered in the futurities on the track. But I finally talked him into it, and I got him, and the rest has just been history.
I love that. That's a great story.
I never do anything normal.
That's okay. Obviously, it works for you.
Yeah.
How do you manage all of the traveling from one rodeo event to another while keeping you and Gus feeling top-notch?
I give Gus all the rest he needs. I rarely ride him except for in competition. I give him big turnouts on the side of my trailer. He has his half brother coming up, and they play and keep things light. And I just get as much rest as I can. My husband goes with me, so he drives, and I'm usually asleep in the passenger seat. And so, yeah, that's basically how we just kind of do everything. We just live by the moment and, just take things as they come.
I was going to ask, how do you stay awake on the road? But you don't.
No, I don't. My favorite pastime is napping. So, I'm good at it. So that's what I'm gonna do.
I love that. Do you ever get burnt out going to so many rodeos, or is it so exciting that you just keep going?
Yeah, you get burnout, but especially by the end of the year. About September, I'm ready to go home, and I'm not one that, likes to be home. So you finally want to get away and do something that's at home and see your family. And I just had my second grandson, so I haven't even got to see him yet. I haven't been home in 2 months,
Oh
so
gosh, that would be pretty tough.
I'll be excited to go home and see him, kind of recoup a little bit. After about 2 weeks at home, I'm like, "Okay, I got to get out of here again." So, yeah, you just need those little breaks. And Gus likes to be home with his brothers, and then I decide, well, let's go again. So you know, everybody's rested up and then we go again.
How do you feel like you mentally prepare for big rodeos like Houston?
You know, now that years have gone by since I've started this, I don't get nervous anymore. It is what it is going to be. So, you know, what I've done in the past has been working. I don't change anything. Gus is a creature of habit. So, you know, the less is more for him. But yeah, I just go into every rodeo saying, you know, we maybe expect the worst, but hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm too old now. I'm 48 years old. I'm not going to get twisted or stress myself out for anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm out here enjoying life and doing the thing that I absolutely love and I dreamed of doing. And, you know, I worked the desk jobs. I, you know, was in corporate and I knew that wasn't for me. And, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of fly by the seat of my pants, which my dad is an extreme planner. And it just goes all through. I'm like, where are you going next? And I was like, I don't know. He's just like, well, you need to write everything down. And I was like, no, that doesn't work
for me.
That's
so great. I love that. That would be me. I'd be your dad. No, we have to plan this.
Right. But the thing is, you plan it. It's not going to go by that plan anyways.
Exactly.
Because it changes every minute.
Yeah. What would you say is like your favorite rodeo to go to?
Well, I have two. Houston, because the fans are amazing. They love us there. The accommodations are perfect. They give us hookups, stalls, water, you know, 3 square meals a day. You know, everybody's there for more than one day. So you actually get to sit down, see your friends,
kind of
talk
enjoy
about
it.
Things, and, you know, just recoup. And the other one is Cheyenne.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, huge arena. It's a tricky arena. Gus absolutely loves it. That whole time, even if you go out to eat and they saw you compete that day, they want to sit down and talk to you. The first year I went, I won my round, and I had just turned my hair red mm-hmm. for fire. And this family saw me, and they had 4 kids with them, and they were going in, and they're like, oh, you won today. And I was like, yeah. And I sat down, and they sat down, you know, a couple tables next to me. And the next thing I look up from my phone, there's 4 little kids sitting in my booth. And
oh my gosh.
Wanting to have dinner with me. So that was fun. Every rodeo I go to, you know, they put it on because they love the sport. And you know, we have pretty much the only sport that still has prayer and everybody stands for the national anthem and we all believe in the same morals. So every single rodeo is special, but those two are, you know, pretty much my top two.
Yeah, those are some good ones. Those are some good ones for sure. What advice would you have for someone breaking into the rodeo world?
Don't overthink everything. You know, plans change every minute. The weather changes every minute. So you can't stress the small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
God has your plan and you just have to follow it and he guides you. And, you know, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. But the more you stress out and the more you think about it, the more things are going to go wrong.
Right.
So just enjoy what you do. Enjoy your horses. Just make sure that you have a set goal and a dream, and in time that does come true if you work hard enough and believe in it enough.
Who have been some of your influences that you've looked up to and kind of gone to for advice over the years?
Before it was, you know, my dad and well, it's still my dad, but my adopted dad when he was alive. And, you know, Marlene McRae has helped me a lot. And, mm-hmm. you know, the girls on the road are extremely helpful. My great friend Emily Beisel and Lisa Lockhart and all them, they're always there if I have questions or I'm not sure about something. Everybody is so helpful that you always have somebody to lean on. My husband is a sounding board. He knows now that if I'm upset, don't answer me, just let me vent.
Yeah.
Because usually if he opens his mouth, the wrong thing is going to come out. So then there's just an argument. So he has learned, just let me have my feelings, and then 5 minutes later, I'll be fine.
Let's talk about Gus a little bit. What an amazing horse. Tell us y'all's story together.
And I got him off the track as a three-year-old. I had his full brother, and I sold him and paid off a lot of debts and, like, my house and my truck and stuff. And then I bought Gus after badgering, because he was supposed to be in the futurities on the track his three-year-old year, because he ran pretty good his two-year-old year. And I had him shipped to my house. I had never seen him before. I got him from Ann Hansen and then her son, Bart Amlesser. They owned the stud. And I called and I said, I need him. And they're like, well, we kind of have him paid up at these futurities. And I was like, well, I don't really care.
I want him.
I want him bad. And I don't have another horse. So, but they were they're like family to us now. And, you know, they're as proud of him as I am as proud of him. You know, from day one, he did anything that I asked him to do.
Mm-hmm.
So him and I have never had an argument. He's never rebelled. He's just like one of those little soldiers that says, yes, ma'am, this is the way we're going to do it. He adapts to me. I adapt to him. And we have so much feel in each other that it just works.
And so you trained him.
Yes.
So kind of take us through that process. You just kind of showed him the barrels and it just came pretty naturally.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much the first time I put him on barrels, I trotted him through the way I wanted him to and, you know, taught him his rate and bent his back and his ribs and let me control each body part I wanted. And, you know, he's just like, okay. And, you know, a month after I started him, he was already in the 1D.
Wow.
So at Jackpots, and he's like, and he was three. I knew I wasn't going to futurity and all that stuff. So I was just entering him, and now he's 14 and a match made in heaven.
What aspects of your Western pleasure and reining and your whole background, do you feel like that really helped when it came to the training process?
It does, because it gives you an idea of how you want your horse to mechanically work. It gives you so much feel in your horse. I know when he switches leads. I know when his foot's off. He knows where my hands are. You know, if I got to pick him up, I can pick him up. If he thinks that I'm wrong and he knows a better angle, he goes to that. So, you know, we kind of work together, and in a split second, it actually works. So
right.
He's extremely honest, and, you know, riding different disciplines just really makes you learn how to ride a horse, how to sit in different atmospheres, different ground, them take care of themselves, stuff like that. So, you know, it's helped a ton.
You see that a lot when it comes to people who have done all the different disciplines. It's almost like the barrel training and the barrel racing comes much easier.
Right. And I mean, you don't question your training when they get it so simply. And, you know, his half brother, he's a lot harder to train, but, you know, he gets it. It's just he's just got to mature. And Gus was mature from the minute he stepped off the trailer.
That's awesome. And so you do have some other horses kind of coming up behind him. Tell us a little bit about the ones that you're training now.
His half-brother is by the same stud, just a Heart of a Warrior. He died last year from colic. He was 22 years old. So there is no more.
Oh, no.
But I bought Rocky a year and a half ago, I think. And, you know, he was off the track. He's out of a Royal Shake'em mare. He is very arrogant, but he also is like a teenage class clown.
Yeah.
To keep his attention and everything is a game, it's a little bit harder with him because he's like, no, I don't feel like doing it that way. I'm going to do it this way. And that's not the right way. So, you know, it's a work in progress. He's 4 coming 5 now. And I'm just waiting for him to have the light bulb come on completely bright so he can help Gus out.
Yeah.
But he keeps Gus on his toes, and they play, and he keeps Gus happy, and Rocky's always happy. So, you know, it just kind of works out.
Will you try and compete on him some this year?
Yes.
So competing at the NFR is kind of the pinnacle of achievement in rodeo. What was that feeling like for you?
It was exciting when I was like so pumped on my way there. But once I stepped in that arena, and, you know, everybody goes, you go into the arena and it's so exciting, and you have this thing just come over you of, wow, I made it. I didn't get that.
Okay.
It was more of, I made it. This is how the arena is. I'm focused. Let's get this started.
Definitely different than some people.
Yeah, I don't get overly excited about a whole lot of things. I get overwhelmed, but I don't try to show it. But yeah, that from the minute they called our name to run down the alley, I had no nerves. I was calm. It just came over me that this is my job. This is what I have to do every day. We take every day separately,
mm-hmm.
and every run separately. And when we have a bad run, we leave it there. We have a good run, we build confidence. And so it was, I think I had a lot different experience than other people.
Did you feel like that setup was more difficult than others?
It was different for the mere fact it's so tiny.
Right.
And I'd never really been in a blind entry like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say you go through the alley, and once you hit the bucket chutes, you hang a tight right, and you do.
I'm on the East Coast here, and everything is kind of like that for us. So it always amazes me. They make all you ladies who are used to these big patterns run on this little tiny pattern.
Right. And that's really weird for us, because we have these big, huge arenas that, you know, is completely open, and then you go into this little trap.
Yeah, I feel like that part would be very hard.
And Gus is 16 hands, so being in a tiny little arena like that, and, you know, he's not a fan of indoors, but he made it work, and, you know, he was comfortable in there.
What do you feel like was your greatest accomplishment of 2023?
I got to go to Calgary, and he won 14,500 at Calgary. You know, you have to be invited to that. And so it's really kind of stressful sometimes. But he liked the arena. It was big. It was wide open. So I just trusted him. Calgary was probably the highlight.
And thinking about your career as a whole, what win has meant the most?
Probably Houston now.
Yeah.
And my round win at the NFR, I won round 8.
Yep. And then what do you still kind of hope to achieve in the sport? And what impact are you hoping to have?
You know, I just want to give everybody the hope that they can do it and follow their dreams. And, you know, you don't have to be, I'm not rich to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to win to go. And, you know, if you think about it hard enough and you desire it hard enough, you can really actually make it happen. You're going to find out who your circle is very quickly, and who you can trust and who you can't. And I just want to keep moving forward and inspiring the younger kids and give them hope. And you don't have to be born into it to do it. So, you know, I just want to just keep bettering myself every year and do right by my horses and just keep going as long as I can.
And that is all for Between the Barrels this week. Thank you guys for listening. You can always stay up to date with everything going on by following us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. And if you like what you hear, you can leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have someone you would like to hear on the show or a question that you'd like answered, don't hesitate to shoot me an email at betweenthebarrels@gmail.com. Tune in next week.